How would you like to discover what you are missing to become a better leader? Crispin Thompson will tell us how to do this. And what's so special about Crispin is he is the founder of the Leadership Studio and a leadership strategist with nearly 30 years of experience driving transformation inside the global technology sector. And he's a former Fortune 100 executive. And he built and led cross-functional teams through large-scale digital, financial, and operational change, translating high-level strategy into real-world execution that delivered measurable results. And today, Crispin helps leaders close the gap between how they see themselves and how others experience them. So, Crispin, tell us about what leaders miss out when it comes to becoming a better leader.
Fuel Podcast with Lily Petrescu shares longevity and anti-aging techniques to stay young forever, increase energy, overcome addiction, and live your longest best life ever, shared by world's most innovative alternative and traditional health thought leaders, healers, and doctors. Discover quantum healing strategies to heal your mind, body, and soul.
You know, I think, first of all, it starts with a bit of introspection. Kind of know thyself and I think be willing to ask for help, to kind of think about where am I strong and maybe where am I not. Because if you don't start from that baseline, right, you're never going to kind of find the pathway to improve. And then I think it's also, I think really, really core to all this is you have to be willing to be open to and accepting feedback. And that, and feedback needs to come in all forms, meaning from coaches and from mentors, but also from people that you lead, right? Because if what you said isn't what they heard, then the message didn't exist. And therefore, leadership didn't really land in the way you wanted it. So all of that kind of comes together in a nice cohesion. And here at the Leadership Studio, we put a very heavy focus on communication as a core attribute for really, really successful leaders.
Thank you. So, like, what's keeping people from becoming better leaders? What is the main thing?
You know, I think it's a few things. I think, first of all, there's a lot of imposter syndrome out there, right? So there's a lot of self-doubt. There's a lot of, am I the right person to say this in this moment? And so, said differently, I think we need more leaders to be, to have more internal confidence, to be more bold in the moment, to be willing to say the thing that needs to be said, and also to kind of like find the right conversation too. So those things all matter. I think there's a lot of talk about, you know, executive presence or leadership presence, and more often than not, that gets defined as a negative. It gets defined as here's what you didn't have versus here, let me help you kind of achieve this right thing. We like to use the phrase of bridging potential to performance. And so back to the original question, right? We need leaders to kind of help define what is their potential. What's the type of leader you want to be and build toward that, knowing that we can't be all things to everyone. So we should figure out what is our style. We should figure out who are we as leaders and really lean into that versus trying to be someone or something that we're not.
Thank you. Tell us more about imposter syndrome. How can someone overcome the imposter syndrome in order to become a better leader?
So imposter syndrome is that feeling when we have like a little kernel of doubt inside us and we're thinking, why am I here? Am I the right person? Gosh, they might ask me a question and I might have an answer, but is that even good enough? Am I good enough? And so that really blossoms, unfortunately, I think for all of us at different times, different stages of our career. And I think there's a lot of ways to work past it. I'll tell you the thing that's helped me when I have faced that at various stages of my career is remembering that people took a chance on me at times in my career. Like maybe I wasn't exactly, all boxes weren't ticked for me to be ready for this role or this project or this whatever. But someone took a chance on me, believed in me, and shame on me for not believing in myself at least as much as someone else has believed in me. So kind of remembering that people took a chance on me and I was able to find success, that's always helped me kind of get past that moment. And if you can't find an applicable comparison like that, then it's a fake it till you make it type situation. Like you've got to be bold. You've got to show that you believe in yourself enough to kind of get past that hurdle so that you create this momentum of self-confidence. And I said fake it till you make it. And I do believe in that statement, but But the make it portion is important in that, right? There's far too many people out there that believe in the fake it part of it for way too long. So if you're unwilling to, like, if there's a weakness, if there's a bit of knowledge, there's something you don't have that's helping drive that feeling of self-doubt, you need to close that gap. You cannot continue to fake it. You will eventually get exposed. And that's far worse than a little bit of self-doubt.
Thank you. How can someone step into a communication style that enables them to properly be heard? And not just be heard, but have the people in the team take action and be enrolled, touched, moved, and inspired by what they are required to do.
For me, I believe it starts with really good foundations. We call this communication basics, and I root it down into three things. I call it voice, persona, and focus. And what I mean there is voice is about you. It's about finding what do you need to do or say or act so that you are the most well received and perceived by your audience? And where do you feel confident? And that might be literally how you're speaking. It might mean preparation. It might mean you need to be standing up or sitting down, but because all of these come into play. Persona is about kind of tailoring your message to your audience. So I often give examples of if you have a big transformation that you need to deliver for some company, if you're talking about that kind of upwards in the organization to senior executives, they need to hear how we're going to get it done and what are the outcomes. They don't need to know the details of specific activities, but if you're talking about the people whose work is being affected, they probably don't care quite so much about the big picture. They care about, what do I need to change? How will this affect me? Is my role going away or staying? So it's about kind of taking the core message and then tailoring it up or down. And then focus is about content. And I think this is the pitfall that so many of us fall into. It's overwhelming our audience with too much in any one setting. So that might mean that we need to boil things up, simplify, or kind of create, you know, comparisons or analogies to get across. Or it might mean we need to talk about this across multiple sessions. There is a limit to how much an audience can see and ingest and truly kind of get there to act upon. So you start with those three things, and that becomes a great foundation to kind of build toward how can I be the great communicator, the great leader that I want to be.
Thank you. Can an insecure leader be a leader that actually creates results for a company? And if so, what steps would this leader need to take in order to properly enroll, touch, move, and inspire the team to make this happen?
So I think it's a great question, because I think there's a myth out there about that great leaders never have insecurities. And I've never met one. I've never met a great leader that doesn't have some degree of insecurity. Maybe in a moment we feel amazingly confident and everything is coming out, but that doesn't mean that there isn't some insecurity or some self-doubt that hangs on the edges, or something we just steer ourselves away from to keep ourselves from putting ourselves in a position to kind of magnify that kind of insecurity. So I would start with, let's kind of ignore this concept that there's such a thing as a completely, you know, secure leader, if you will, or a leader that lacks any insecurity. I said differently, I think that we should also stay away from the word perfection. So as a leader, particularly if we're thinking about kind of communicating, landing messages, building strategies, setting visions, we want to be better than we were yesterday. Always be better. But I think perfection is a real dangerous word, right? Because the instant something happens, especially if you're talking about like we're communicating something in front of a big audience, whether that's in person or virtual, the way so many things are these days, the instant something comes up that was unexpected, unanticipated, that has the ability to kind of deviate, if we were focused on it, this has got to be a 10 out of 10 or else, anything less than that begins to kind of crack open, you know, those insecurities, versus if we start with, we're going to be better than we were yesterday. We're going to focus on a realm of continuous improvement. I think that's such a better place to start from than thinking about perfection. So when I think about kind of leaders and insecurities, I think we need to be aware of what they are, right? So if we're the kind of person who just doesn't want to be in front of an audience that's like a physical in-person audience, then we need to work on that. We need to be aware of what that is so we can begin to work on what's the root of that. And so often it's perfection, right? They're trying to be perfect. And if you start from, I don't want to be terrible, and we build up from that, then we start to kind of lean in. But as we build leaders, as we coach leaders, as we kind of improve them, then what we find in them is that they're able to kind of identify these areas where their own insecurities or weaknesses are likely to kind of pull away from their confidence and help them kind of steer away from that. We help them go through different roles and trainings to kind of build up these things, kind of to counter that, and then, you know, kind of help them work past it versus saying, you know, you can never ever have this, and if you do, you can't be successful. Because for sure, I've had great success in my career. Many around me have had great success, and I know we've all carried with us, you know, insecurities at specific moments, or even kind of across things that we just always are thinking about. So I think we're imperfect as humans, and we should think about that as ourselves as leaders as well.
Thank you. What are the most effective leadership styles that are working really well for companies, considering that every person who works for you has a different preference and a different personality? So for example, like, some people really like to shine, others really like to be sociable, others are really task oriented, others are gonna do the very minimum that they need to do in order to get paid. How do you like mix all of that to kind of turn it into a great sauce that makes the company ultra successful?
You know, I think one thing that's really interesting about the way you describe that is you have all these kind of different archetypes of people and different styles about the way they work. And you started the question with what's the best leadership style? And I'm here to say there's not one best, right? We need to be adaptive as leaders. And if you have a leader that recognizes that you have these different kind of styles and their employees around them, you're starting from an amazing point, right? You if you are an observant leader, if you're aware that you have different employees or different teammates that have different needs, different styles, then you're kind of starting from a great place of let's say emotional intelligence, right? Because you're already creating this empathy and these links, and you're aware of their own needs. Once you're aware, then you can choose as a leader how much of yourself do you want to adapt to their styles. I don't think we can be everything to everyone. I think that's maybe not a recipe for failure, but certainly it's a recipe for exhaustion, right? If we have to tailor who we are to every single individual. But I think if we can show our teams that we understand that there are different needs, the different styles, and we can aim our, you know, or adapt, maybe is a better way to say it, adapt our leadership style to kind of meet them where they are or meet them closer to where they are and let them also adapt, then I think you're creating this really engaged, inclusive environment where people feel seen. I think that's super important. And where they also can feel like they can be successful, even for that person, by the way, who just wants to do the minimum. Maybe just, you know, clocking in, clocking out, doing their job, that's success for them. But that's okay, right? We don't need any one single type of employee, just the same way we don't need any one single type of leader. So we adapt our styles in those moments to bring out the best from the different people that we have, from different styles that we have. But you've got to start with observation and engagement and really kind of being willing to listen to what is it that you need or want. Now, I'm going to put one significant caveat on all of this. The environment will also dictate what leadership is needed in that moment. So it could be that we have all these different styles that you articulated, all of which are important. Each individual's needs should be understood, recognized, validated, blah, blah, blah. But if there is an urgent, we cannot do anything other than deliver right now type thing, then we are not in a position to accept everyone's individual kind of needs or styles. And that's where we need to lean more into, I understand this is not going to be the way that we normally do things. This may not be the way that you as individuals may choose, but for now we have to deliver, and here's what you have to deliver and why. And I think if you can set that tone in that moment right there and kind of articulate, here's the reason why maybe the style is different or the urgency is more intense, then it helps kind of lean across. But also, if you can set, this is a time-bound exercise, like it's going to be really tough for the next 2 weeks or 2 months or whatever it is, and then we can get back to more of a regular style, people are more willing to kind of buy in and adapt their own selves to something different for that period of time.
Thank you. I would describe myself as a scared bunny at work, a task-oriented scared bunny. But if you put me in war conditions where there's some sort of competition, I'm always going to win. And I just literally turned from scared bunny into lion. The thing that I tend to struggle with is actually to rally all the team together to kind of like, okay, we'll listen to Lily. And it's sometimes people get really shocked to see like what I'm actually capable of doing until it's too late. And my question is, how do you turn scared bunnies into lions when you have to? Because basically every company wants to kind of make the most of every worker. And I would say that I'm like intrinsically motivated by the task itself. Like, for example, for me, it doesn't matter that I would get paid 20,000 or 2,000 or 1,000 or even I don't get paid. It's very important to actually do the task to the best of my ability and to know that I've made a real difference to the company. And that is more important, that I've made the company profitable and I've made the company work and I've made a real difference more than actually what I made personally in terms of wage or, you know. Whereas I would say most people don't think like that. And I didn't even know that that was the case. But I would say, how do you turn, you know, every employee as a leader into kind of like seeing that they can go from like being a scared bunny into being a lion and kind of like being so motivated to do the work in such a way that they are gonna make the company profitable?
I think first of all, I think there's a really interesting question that's great to ask your team sometimes, especially if you're a new leader to a team or to an organization, is kind of ask questions of individuals. And this is a nuanced question, but it would work for you, is do you love to win or hate to lose? Right. And there's a difference, right? I think you're the love to win person, right? Because if you're willing to step out of this, as you called it, scared bunny thing and transform into lion, that's a love to win type focus. And the hate to lose, that's more of the protective area. And again, there's not a right or wrong, right? But helping to kind of identify where people fit within certain buckets, or maybe it's more along a gradient, maybe is a better way to describe that. That really helps. But you'll notice a lot of what I'm saying here is about asking questions, listening to responses, actually internalizing what the individuals say. So I think the more that leaders can engage with their teams and engage with the, whether it's in groups or individuals, but ask questions and actually care about the responses, by the way. So if I'm going to bother to ask you, do you love to win or hate to lose? It should matter what your response is, and I should listen to it, right? Because that becomes intelligence for me for a future thing. And, you know, I think there's understanding what motivates individuals, right? Because compensation clearly is a motivating factor, no matter who we are, right? But motivation isn't always completely tied to compensation. So finding different ways to motivate. Maybe it's the scared bunny is a scared bunny because they feel like they're never going to get the opportunity to shine. And so if we show that we're willing to listen to ideas, and if you have a great idea, you get to go run that project and shine, then that's a great thing. I also think that back to the observation side of this, the asking questions, eliciting responses, there's an onus on the leader to help share that as well. So if I have a team of people and I'm new to them and I'm kind of collecting little bits of intelligence, and I'm learning, oh, this person is likely in this area, this person, I want to share that also with the team. Here's what I'm seeing, and not any sort of negative. Keep everything very positive. Here's something I see in this person here, and let it start to come out so that people can see and hear and interact a little bit. Because sometimes we form these kind of invisible barriers, right, between ourselves and others. So you talked about, like, what if people didn't even know I could do that? Partially, maybe that's because you've never told anyone, hey, I have a secret superpower. You give me a task and I'm going to run to it. And I think that's great to hear what people, when they see it, right, will engage that much more, and you'll become an asset to them, maybe as a question or a future need or a project that they also can lean on. Or maybe there's another scared bunny who wants to be aligned with no idea, who can now come to you and say, I feel like you and I are kind of the same, except when something's aligned and then you're different. How do you do that? And then you can look inside yourself and help explain that. But the leader has to kind of understand who are these people. So you're not, like, if you're creating new teams, you're not creating all teams of scared bunnies or all teams of lions, right? Because diversity of thought is super, super amazing, right? And getting people together that maybe look at things a little differently, think about things a little differently, act upon things a little differently. That's where, because you talk about the secret sauce, that's where the magic really comes out, right? When you have all these kind of different approaches, not necessarily conflicting approaches, but different approaches that complement one another to kind of build towards something truly, truly magnificent.
Thank you. How do you empower your team without getting them disempowered by their newly found powers? So let's say if I'm, you know, if I've always been like a scared bunny, and then all of a sudden I see myself as a lion, and then all the team is kind of like empowered now to see, oh, I can actually think differently. I can take some initiative. And how do you kind of reduce conflict and the likelihood that now everyone wants to be the leader, the decision maker?
As much as I think as a leader, the style that I have and the style that I try to kind of foster around me is I like this term, kind of boundaryless teaming. Like, you know, we don't kind of, and I believe very much in a kind of a flat organization. I understand kind of management layers, but I think leaders can and should reach across the organization or reach down through the organization at any point. Now, all that being true, we all still have a boss. And I think that's important to understand as well. So we, as much as I want to have a fully engaged and empowered team, there is still a structure. And so it shouldn't have to be like permission to do everything, but there has to be an awareness. There has to be communication. And we have to, that happens not overnight, but it happens when you show there's trust. So we allow, let's say, healthy risk taking. And you talked about conflict, and I'm a big believer in what I call healthy conflict. In fact, if I get the opportunity to design organizations, I will kind of purposely create little bits of overlap between edges of organizations so that there is a little bit of conflict, a little bit of gray area about maybe who owns this area. And I don't do that to slow things down. If I do it, quite the opposite. I want the two areas to push each other, right? No, I've got this. I can do it better. I've got this. I can do it. And then we can figure out where really are the best ideas coming from. But I wanted to create kind of inspiring competition, right? So that we're aiming for the best versus feeling like, oh, this is my turf, get off. And so I think a little bit of friction or healthy conflict, I think, is a great way to kind of build resistance. The leader has to be strong enough to manage those things. Sometimes healthy conflict becomes big conflict, right? And so we have to, especially if you start to have really, really capable leaders of those teams, they're going to want to do their own thing, shine in their own way, have their own teams shine in their own way. So the like myself in those cases, I have to kind of watch the personalities, help keep them in check a little bit, you know, create. Again, I've got to really lean in on emotional intelligence and empathy and kind of understand where people are so that I can manage those things so that healthy friction stays healthy friction and doesn't become kind of a breaking conflict.
Thank you. How does a leader reduce the likelihood of cultural conflict or, you know, cultural friction? Because I think, let's say I'm from Romania, okay, and I speak my mind, and I have been in the UK for 20 years, and I can't say that I have softened that much. Like, for example, if you'll ask me, like, your opinion about your hair, I'll tell you, I think your hair looks great. But if it didn't, I would also tell you, you know? And I think, like, it would be quite common in the UK to be like, oh, yeah, I think it's okay. You know, like, it's very common to try to be as diplomatic and even to, like, soften the truth quite a lot. And to me, that's like being inauthentic. I just cannot do that. So, and that could lead to conflict. You know, that's why I really prefer not working in a proper company, like a corporate company. I don't think I could survive there.
No, I mean, you absolutely could. It depends on how it's run and how it's managed. I think one thing that was very interesting to me, and because I managed truly, truly global teams, including in Romania, and I can talk about Romania because it was tough for me in the beginning, but I think one big failure, I believe, of companies is kind of starting from the premise, big companies, let's say multinationals, if they start from the premise of we're all the same and we're going to act in unison, I think that's a fallacy because we're not all the same. We have very different backgrounds. We have very different approaches. Just like you said, how's my hair? It could be better versus, oh, you know, you're looking smashing today. Like those are, it might be the exact same, both people thinking the exact same thing. This guy needs a haircut or I wouldn't have done that. But you know, it's different points of view. And I think one thing that was very much eye-opening for me, because for a long time I had just teams in the US or just teams in the US and Mexico. And so I could kind of adapt my style a little bit. But then when my scope truly, truly went global, it was very interesting to me as a leader. Where was I facing, you know, more challenging questions, like in Bucharest, where I felt like everyone was very, not just willing to speak their mind, but just challenge authority, like really come at me hard. And that was, let's say that's the complete other end of the spectrum from, say, China, where I learned that I had to really create an environment where they could ask challenging questions or could probe. Otherwise, they would just accept what I said as we're going to do it, even if it was a terrible idea, by the way. So I needed to kind of learn a little bit more about the culture, the style, what works. And again, that's not about me changing completely, but if I'm unwilling to adapt, then I'm also should be unwilling to accept that things are likely to improve. So for me, it was about, I think a lot about maybe the, you know, why is any one country the way it is? A lot of it has to do with the maybe, let's say, the recent history, how are things, and what's driven that particular style. But if I had started with everyone's going to act like an American, guess what? I would have been the least favorite, least successful boss ever, right? Because Americans have a very different style and attitude than people in Mexico, than Romania, than Poland, than China, than India, any of the places where I've managed. But I think that accepting that things are different, listening for, you know, again, it starts with creating an environment where people understand that there is safety. You are allowed to speak your mind. There won't be repercussion within a boundary, obviously, but then letting people kind of trade ideas. And then if I see someone starting to kind of get upset, be willing to step in and talk about intent. So during COVID, for sure, I felt like I started using this term, listen for intent, to my leaders, because we had gone from largely being in offices to no one being in an office and not even always on camera. And so things could be said, and if you're off camera, that might be taken as, man, that was unnecessarily aggressive or abrupt or whatever. So I started coaching my leaders to listen for intent. What do we think they meant to say? Ignore the words and start with the, they didn't mean to upset you. They didn't mean to anger you. They didn't mean to do any of that. If we start from those points, then we're likely going to get to the common ground. So what I would find myself doing was inserting myself into conversations and saying, you know, what I think I just heard from the team in Bucharest was this. And it may not be exactly what they said, but then they can chime in and say, oh, yes, that's what I meant. Or they can say, no, that's not at all what I meant. I meant this. But at least we're getting to clarity. And then I can say, okay, well, here's how I believe we're likely to respond from the other regions, and then let them kind of build in. But it showed my teams that I was listening, showed my leaders that, you know, we should listen more for intent. And again, kind of soften, I think it's great, right? There's all the different cultures are great. And I would, once I learned all these different things, I would put different work in different places because I realized I'm likely to get the best outcomes in those areas. But again, if I had started with a peanut butter spread, everything would have been just fine, but nothing would have been great.
Thank you. What about how can a leader empower his team, his or her teams, if the team is actually multicultural, as it happens in London? You're not going to have just like a team of Romanians or a team of Chinese or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's going to be one Chinese, one Romanian, one Russian, one, you know, from like literally everywhere, one Indian, and everyone has his own interpretation of whatever happened and his own story based on his personal trauma and background and training. So like, how do you coach people? How do you coach leaders to reduce the likelihood that the people will misunderstand each other and therefore produce less as a result because of conflict, cultural conflict?
Yeah. I think it starts with, while we need to understand and recognize individuals as individuals, we also need to lead as teams. And if I go around, or if any other leader goes around, and they have just one-on-one conversations about the same topic, then everyone's going to hear what they heard. Right. And what you said may not be how they interpreted. I have, unfortunately, lots of examples in my past where I felt like I'd said X, Y, Z, and that was not what was heard or acted upon. So you can have the one-on-one conversations, can and should, But you've got to bring people back together as a team and then reiterate so that everyone's hearing the shared goal, the common outcome. Show them how their work is aligning to maybe your own organization strategy or the company vision, and let them feel tied into kind of the broader community versus I'm just going to settle into I see things my way, I do things my way. Because that when you start to foster that communication and you create opportunities for individuals to engage publicly, like as a team, then you can also see where a conflict's likely to occur. Maybe they still happen in some way or another, but again, it's the leader's job to help kind of figure out what's the best way to engage the team and keep the team engaged and motivated. Because the other thing you're asking about is motivation here too, right? So without making any generalizations, like people from different cultures are likely to have different motivations that could go completely from the, I just want to be left alone. That alone, it can be a motivating factor for some people. If you just leave me alone, let me do my job, all the way to, I only want promotion and cash, right? So those are those complete opposites of the spectrum there. But leaders have to be willing to engage and understand and pick up a book, maybe understand a little bit more about kind of general cultural tendencies without trying to apply that in one big broad brushstroke either. But it starts with engage, ask questions, again, care about the responses. Those things matter.
Thank you. What's the best way for a brand new leader to get listened to, heard, and respected? Because I'm thinking, let's say if your allegiance was to your former leader, and this, let's say this leader left for whatever reason, then all of a sudden you could be a little bit disgruntled and maybe a little bit unwilling to listen to this new leader. How do you get heard, listened to, and respected when you're just like coming in brand new and nobody knows why they should listen to you?
You know, I think so. We have to talk about confidence here a little bit, because if you're a new leader coming in to an organization about which you know little, or a team about which you know little, then it's easy to feel kind of rattled a little bit, or you use the term respect, like, how are they going to respect me? You know, respect, like confidence, is earned. It's not given, right? So they will do what you tell them to do because the org chart tells them they have to do what you tell them to do. But what I would want leaders to think about is how do we create the environment where the people want to work for you because they see that you have their best interests to the extent that we can, and that our work is important. And so we want to follow you because you're engaging, you're authentic, you're showing us that you care about the lives and livelihoods of the team. And then respect will follow. But the trap is that if you come in and just assume everyone will respect me because my business card says X, I think you're going to be off-putting, right? And what you're going to do is, if you already had an individual or individuals on the team who were likely to maybe, like you said, be disgruntled about some recent change, all you're going to do is validate that feeling to them that, oh, this was a change that shouldn't have happened. The other guy or gal was better. Why do I have to listen to this person? You know, who are they anyway? I think be open and honest, come in confident, like you're there for a reason, but don't feel like you need to come in with, pounding the fist and it's my way or no way. I think be willing to kind of say who you are and what your style is and expect out of them. But also listen to them. What do they expect? Again, it's kind of, there's always going to be compromise, but kind of in the early days, especially, meet them more where they are so that they can feel connected to you. And in short order, it will come around. And if it isn't, then you need to begin to think about, how are the team dynamics set up? Do we have the right individuals and right roles? Because more often than not, what I've seen is when you have people that are particularly frustrated and they're venting, you know, in public forums to leaders, there's something usually going on about maybe they're not in the right role, maybe they've been stuck doing the same thing for years, and we can refresh that, or kind of look at back to even just the archetypes of people. Maybe we just have the wrong kind of organizational design. Maybe we're not structured there correctly. And I think whenever we're given the opportunity to come into something new as a new leader, we should also take the opportunity to think about, not about wholesale change, but what are the right tweaks we could make to make this organization even better than it was already?
Thank you. Tell me why some leaders have this type of executive presence whereby you meet them and perhaps in the first 5 minutes you feel like, oh my God, I feel so inspired by this person and I don't even know this person. And you feel like they are so strong and you're like, oh my God, I am gonna listen to everything this person says. And you feel so enrolled in everything they have to say. It's like the way they speak and the way they stand up and the way they... Mm-hmm. They walk around, like, why is it that some people kind of emanate this kind of aura of leadership? And what are they eating? What are they doing differently?
They've worked at it, right? That doesn't come overnight. And the other thing I would say is, if a leader wants to be seen that way, they can be. It requires effort. It requires practice. It requires, you know, kind of thoughtful approaches to where are the areas that they're being held back. So it starts with that leader worked on that. The other thing I would say is very, very likely they have become very good at something that I call adaptive speech. So this is recognizing the audience that you're talking to, creating engaging, you know, hooks and things with the audience, and the ability to move on, but also that they have a very specific style. And I'm not going to say anyone's style is the best one, right? Because the quiet leader, the loud leader, the funny leader, the serious leader, all of them can be that person you just described. But if someone tries to be the loud leader, the funny leader, the quiet leader, and the serious leader all in the same speech, it's going to come across like they don't quite know who they are. And they're not going to create that air of authenticity that you're really describing. So it's, you know, I use the term introspection kind of at the beginning of this conversation, right? It's, you know, if you know who you are and you can lean into that, that will come across, right? Because your own confidence will be there too. And confidence breeds confidence. So if you yourself are confident as a leader, you will create confidence in yourself from those leading. And confidence is not the same as ego, by the way. I think you want to be sure of who you are. I think the simplest rule is, you know, say what you mean and mean what you say. I think if you start in the very beginning like that, then it's really, really good and powerful. And unfortunately, probably not so similar to a lot of other leaders. I think there's a lack of really authentic leaders across a lot of companies these days. And, you know, if we can help leaders really, really lean into that point, it's fantastic.
Thank you. What kind of training or assessments are required for a leader to undertake for himself and also for the team so that he can actually fully understand his audience or let's say his team and mm-hmm. understand what buttons to press to enroll them into becoming better, more productive, and better to work as a team as well?
There's a lot of approaches there. I think for sure, at the Leadership Studio, we have our own leadership assessment that we have built, and it's anyone can take it. It's free. It's one click right off the main website. And what that does is it helps kind of articulate who you think you are as a leader, right? Because it's all self-assessment questions. So the end result is not, what do I think you are? It's really you kind of identifying yourself into a certain area. And then what it will tell you is, where do you likely feel confident and where do you likely not? And if that really, hopefully it opens the door to leaders being more willing to kind of accept that there's areas that either I'm treading into where I'm showing breaks in confidence, or there's areas that I could lean more into that would really, really help. At the same time, we could do that for teams as well. We're always happy to kind of help with that. But I think from a leader's perspective, asking really good questions of your team and kind of getting to know them, not all the way down to a personal level, what's the name of your cat, that sort of thing, but getting to know what motivates you, what excites you, what are your aspirations, you know, maybe in the next few years as an employee for your career, those things will help, because what you will start to see is, how do people think? How do people learn? And then as a leader, you'll start to once you've kind of identified how do people learn or how are people most motivated, it will give you such great insights. And then combine that with like your own leadership style and assessment, then you can really begin to maximize these things toward what's the fastest way to be the most successful possible.
Thank you. What makes poor leaders?
Well, any number of things, but I think the, you know, being very closed off as a leader to new thoughts or ideas, I think that's a good recipe for bad leadership. We've talked a little bit about emotional intelligence today, and you know, often we talk about EQ. So EQ is like the emotional quotient, like IQ is for intelligence. You know, leaders that are maybe very technically competent but very, very low EQ, they're going to hit a ceiling. And they should, right? Because I think in order to really be effective as a leader across disciplines, you have to be willing and able to engage the human side of this. It cannot be simply that you know how the things are done. You also have to know how do the people get the work done as well, and kind of lean into that. I think, generally speaking, I'm not a big fan of the dictatorial style, the pound the fist, the swearing, all this kind of thing. I firmly admit there's a time and place when that canon should be necessary. I've had leaders in my own organizations that I would say were really, really maybe too aggressive or would lean in to some of those areas more than I would like them to. But if I had a can't miss, must do, absolutely should be delivered project that has to be done in weeks, that's the person I would hire, right? Because I know that even though it would be tough and there would be cleanup I would have to do afterward, the results would also happen. So I think as leaders, you know, being willing to adapt and make choices around all that. So like being closed off, you know, low EQ, those are going to create bad leadership principles. I think the, you know, treating individuals or acting in a way that creates an environment where people believe that fairness is not there is really a recipe for disaster. So if people feel for whatever reason that you treat an individual or a team in one way that is different from how you would treat another individual or team in another way, it will come to a head sooner than later. And if I can only speak to the global leaders that might be listening, we should be really careful about how we see and react to things, because nothing will begin to break a team faster than if one country believes that you're treating another country differently, because that's really, because then it's not a person, right? Then it's the whole team, and there's going to be time zone differences. So they're all getting pissed off about one thing and while you aren't. So we have to really, really be aware of how are we acting, reacting. And that could be as simple as body language, right? We just have to be really hyper aware of ourselves and create an environment where it's not about everyone gets an award, but the rules of the road should be similar and should be followed by all. And setting that environment is the leader's job.
Thank you. Tell us where entrepreneurs can connect with you.
So I think there's a few ways. You can find me, Crispin Thompson, on LinkedIn, or you can find the Leadership Studio on LinkedIn. You also can reach us on our website, which is leadership-studio.com. And, you know, we're always happy to engage. And we do coaching at both the individual level or at, we call it cohort, but multiple executives together as well. And, you know, we're always looking for how can we help leaders really find the right thing. And I love, you know, your audience here is great, right? It's a lot of leaders, aspiring leaders, entrepreneurs, and you know, I would love to help them as well. So anyone that would like to engage a Leadership Studio, if you reference this podcast and if you use the code Lily, it'll be 15% off. So we're happy to engage there as well.
Thank you.
Follow me for more interviews with world's most innovative health change makers to live your healthiest life ever.